This morning I will be presenting results from some analysis I did recently on San Francisco Partner Services data to find sexual networks of patients. Now, why was I interested in networks? Well, defining networks have always been central to STD epidemiology because defining the network of partners to cases defines the only population really at risk for STDs. Also, people in the same social network as cases can be at risk because of other partners their own partners have in common that they're not aware of. For this reason, partner notification has always been a cornerstone of STD control activities. Furthermore, the mathematics of STD epidemics shows that when people are not selecting partners at random, the more unequal the distribution of partners in the population, the larger the epidemic will become. So STD epidemics are really sustained by sexual activity concentrated in a relatively small core of persons in the community. And effective STD control efforts must identify and treat these core transmitters. Attempts to do so usually involve analysis of geography of cases and reaching out to providers in high incidence areas, but I was interested in whether there was anything in our own partner notification data that could help us find these core transmitters. And I was motivated largely by what's been going on with syphilis in San Francisco. After the increases that began in 1999, cases had decreased to 354 in 2007, but then they increased to 1,020 cases in 2013, which was the most cases we saw in any year since 1984. And sadly, our resources have not grown at the same rate as the number of cases. And back in 1984, we had more staff doing partner notification and less work to do since we were not following up on HIV exposures at that time. Doing partner notification for all these cases is a struggle, so I wanted to see if there was anything in our data that could help us prioritize cases and become a little more efficient. We've been doing partner notification for syphilis in San Francisco for many decades, and we began doing partner notification for HIV exposures, certain ones at least, over 20 years ago. We follow the standard CDC protocols. The idea is you talk to the patient and you define a critical period, they call it, where he or she could have been infected based on the stage of disease, their testing, their treatment history. And then we ask for all the sex partners in that critical period that the patient can remember so that we can follow up with them and get them treated. In San Francisco, if they can only identify partners by an email address or a profile at a sex site, we attempt to reach the partners that way. Since 1996, all the STD data from our program has been maintained in a single person-based registry that I have named ISHTAR. It stands for Integrated Surveillance and Clinic Health Tracking Registry. It includes all the data from surveillance programs, screening, partner notification, and also the medical record data from San Francisco City Clinic. Partners and cases are all handled the same way in this database. When our DIS get the names of these partners, they look them up in the registry to see if they're already in the system, and if they are, they simply add the partner notification to their record. And if that partner turns out to be a case, then that too is added to their record. We can identify people in our system just by an email address or by a profile if that's the only information the original patient had. And if we find out who they actually are, we can put their names or merge their patient records together. Now, this organization in our database lends itself to identifying chains and networks of patients that have named one another as sex partners. And I had tried for a while to find a way for the computer to sort of sift out all these chains and networks automatically. And earlier this year, I succeeded in developing an algorithm that can do that. This is the algorithm. It looks complicated, but it's actually a lot more simple than it looks. First, you find all the named partnerships in a time period, and you make an unduplicated list of all the individuals in that partnership. You take the first guy, you put him in network one, you find all his partners, you put them in network one as well. You find all of their partners, and if any of them are not already in the network, then you add them. And you keep going until you get to the point where none of the partners you find are not in the network. Then you find the next individual that was not in that network, put him in network two, process all his partners, and you keep going until all the individuals in the partnerships are in one network or another. So I ran all of our partner notification data from 2013 through this network. Now note that this is partnerships identified in 2013, not necessarily sexual encounters in 2013. There were 1,332 individuals who either named a partner or who were named by a case, and 1,066 sexual partnerships identified among all of these. And that's counting each partnership just once. no matter how many times it was identified. And here is what I found. There were 286 distinct networks that the algorithm sorted out. And predictably, there were more of the smaller ones than the larger ones. There were 182 of only two persons, which was about two-thirds of all the networks, and 47 more of only three people. So together, that was 80% of the networks were no more than three people. And as you can see, there's networks of every size up to about 11. They tail off. And then there's something surprising at the end. One big network of 435 individuals all connected together. And here it is. I call it Mega Network. This is a network diagram which has a box for everybody in the network and one line for each partnership that was identified. This graphic here also shows them by their gender. There were only two women, here they are, in the network, and one transgendered patient, 432 men. So that's what San Francisco looks like. This diagram shows mega network by the disease condition. The blue squares are the syphilis cases. The red squares are the HIV cases. The purple squares, like this guy right here and this guy right here, those were individuals who had both HIV and syphilis in the year, either at the same time or at different times. And then the unshaded boxes are the contacts. Now, some of these unshaded boxes, the contacts that didn't turn out to be a case, like this guy right here, turned out to be rather important bridges in this entire network. And also 51 of these contacts were only ever identified by an email address or by a profile name at a sex site. This shows the HIV status of the people in the network. The red cases, unfortunately, are the HIV positives, and the blues are the HIV negatives. And the unshaded ones are ones for whom we have no information. If you look at this, you see a lot of areas in the network where you have positives having sex with positives. But other places, there's a lot more, like this guy up here, there's a lot more mixing of positives and negatives going on. And then lastly, this slide here shows whether we succeeded in following up on the people. The red boxes are the contacts that we never actually reached to evaluate them to figure out that they were cases. So those are places where conceivably the network might have actually had more connections. So my thought was that big jump that I saw from networks of like 20 to one big network of 435 was like a qualitative difference. And I thought maybe Mega Network here is those core transmitters that I've been looking for. So I did some comparisons between Mega Network and everybody else in every other network. And sure enough, they're more likely to be HIV positive. They had more previous syphilis cases reported to us. But then I started wondering how meaningful the comparisons were. Some of the other things I wanted to look at were more complete for the cases, more complete for Mega Network because it had more cases in it. We only asked venues of partners and drug use for the cases, not for the contacts. So it's kind of unfair to compare a big network with smaller ones. And also, what network you were in depends upon the length of time I used to define it. So I reran the partnerships for each quarter of the year so you can see how Mega Network grew and how it makes a difference what period of time you use. These are the connections from the first quarter, then from the second quarter, then from the third quarter, and then from the fourth quarter. So if I had only used the last quarter or even the last 6 months, these guys over here would have appeared to have been in a smaller six-person network and not part of the giant network. So the time period matters. And predictably, we find even bigger networks if you use longer periods of time. If you put all of 2012 in the mix, in addition to 2013, you get a network of 998 individuals. And then just for fun, and because the computers don't complain, I put in all the data we've ever collected in Ishtar, going all the way back to 1997. We have had 11,551 persons that we either interviewed or were named by interview, and 6,400 of them, more than half of them, can be tied together in one big network. But then again, I was wondering, is this a network? Are these the core transmitters? Or is this really just the network of everyone? I mean, if we had complete information on everybody's partnerships, we'd see that they're all one big network, going back to those poor Italian sailors in 1494. And so to the extent that I've showed that there's a big network in San Francisco, all I've really showed is that we've got good data and that syphilis in San Francisco is in fact a sexually transmitted disease, which is not really worthy of a late breaker. But what I think that even if I haven't showed that finding giant networks does not show that they're core transmitters, I've showed that we've got a very rich set of data here that if we look at it in the right way, we very well might find those core transmitters. The algorithm is very quick, and I'm planning on building it right into our system so that our disease control investigators can find the connections that they might not have seen. We still use the LOT system in San Francisco, if any of you are familiar with that, where related cases are put in the same paper folder. Don't get me started on folders. Mega Network had cases from 62 different filing lots in it for one calendar year. And if we had known how those cases were connected, that might have improved the investigations while we were still doing them. We need to look at the length of time that is meaningful to define a network. And we have to balance the need to find potential transmission, which requires a shorter period of time, with the need to find a more complete social network, which needs, and the potential for future contact, which requires a longer network. And maybe simply being part of a giant network is not as important as how close you are to the other people in it. So we're going to be looking at measures of centrality and connectedness in the network to see if we can find people that are more important to sustaining the network, the epidemic. So yeah, the theme of our conference, of course, is getting more STD prevention for the money by maximizing impact and efficiency. Well, we may be able to maximize the impact and efficiency of our partner notification simply by looking at the networking data that comes out of it. And it is our hope that the simple integrated design we've had for our data, combined with new ideas on network analysis, will allow us to find ways to control this epidemic. Before I end, I'd like to acknowledge the people that actually did the hard work, the people that did the interviews and field investigations and reviewed all the cases. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Pretty thought-provoking. Any questions? Stand up, identify yourself.
Harlan Ross, Lifeline, Hunter County Division of HIV and STD Program. Thank you for a great presentation, Bob. That was really thought-provoking. The question that first comes to me is, did you look at, or is there a way to look at, with this, something you touched on at the end, which is the interventions that you were doing as you were following up on the cases, would presumably people would be treated, and then their transmissibility to other people would stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. So is there a way to look at this and say what's the effect of our field work on stopping the disease as it moves through the network? I mean, I realize that these are cases who are connected going back, but can you look and see what the impact of the field work is?
I hope so. We're going to be, like I said, looking at which interventions, which cases we found and treated might have been more important. Maybe I can just go back and put the picture up here. You can see that some of these connections are more important than others, and we're going to look at how we succeeded in finding the people that were more central to it. Was that what you were getting at, or?
I guess so. But part of it had to do with the thing you were saying about, well, the longer time you see the network connect better, but then you're not really, in the critical period now.
Yeah.
So you don't have transmission necessarily through this.
Well,
network.
Yeah. The thing is that some of this is kind of a backwards way of getting at the clustering concept. I mean, I don't want to take up a lot of time, but we do ask for some partner. We do ask some cases, who do you know, even if they're not a sex partner? Well, the idea of there is to get at these kind of people that might be cases or contacts of contacts. This is another way of getting at it, by actually showing, going back through time and forward through time, where those social, those sexual connections that might matter to your social network.
Very similar to when infections are imported that we may have thought we eliminated here, or new infections, or even foodborne infections, the way this looks is similar to some outbreaks we've seen in malaria.
Sure.
And then my question is, have you done analysis based on age? Like, can you therefore define by an age group and say maybe we can do an epi aid in this housing project or in this school or in this community center?
Without taking up the rest of the session, which I could. One of the problems is that a lot of things you want to look at are sort of time dependent, including age. And if you're talking about 1 year, you're going to have one age. But for example, the network of everybody, people aged over that time. And looking at like where you met partners, whether you used drugs, those are all specific for a date. And it gets complicated to like classify this guy as a drug user or not, when perhaps one time he was and another time he wasn't. That's the challenge in looking at some of those risk factors. You have to look at them kind of in aggregate. But you're also right that the algorithm doesn't have to be sexual networks. It could be, you know, people that had dinner together or anything. Yeah. Thank you.